Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Join us this week is Rachel Calhoun. Hello, Rachel. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Marvellous, marvellous. Thank you for coming on. Rachel, you're part of Django Girls that we're going to talk about in a bit. But tell you what, how about you tell us how you got into Django and your backstory and all of that, and we'll begin from there.
All right. How I kind of got into programming. All right. So, I kind of got to go a little bit farther back than that. I was, I studied, you know, foreign languages in college because, you know, I was told do what you love, and I did the thing that was easy for me. So, and I got to travel. That was really fun, Spanish and French. And then after I graduated, I went to, Korea to teach English there, as one does with a Spanish and French degree. And then I was
totally natural.
I was there for a while, and I kind of hit a point where I couldn't go anywhere, and I had an interview actually for an e-publishing app, and they needed someone with, you know, English teaching experience and some business experience and some tech experience, and I was like, well, I have one. So I tried it out, and during the interview they asked me, you know, do you know what HTML is? And I was like, yeah, you know, something with the web. I don't know, like, that's like the level I was starting at. So I said, I didn't get that job, obviously, but I figured that'd be a good time to start, you know, learning some programming because I figured it could help me with anything I did. And from there, I did a couple days of JavaScript, but then luckily I found a Python group and that started my Python journey. I was in Korea at the time in Seoul.
Right. Okay. So I knew you'd been in Korea because I met you at DjangoCon US a couple of years ago.
And yes.
You took us around to a Korean barbecue, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
this great restaurant. You knew what all the dishes were, which it turns out it didn't matter because they were all great, but you were driving the menu there.
You were there for a little while. You were there 8 years, right? I mean, that's because most people go and do a year, two, three max, but 8 years is, that's a good commitment.
Yes, Will. Thanks for aging me. Yes.
If you're on this podcast, you're young, because Will and I are quite, you know, we're walking stick territory these days.
No, I say that with deep respect, actually. So this was was this in Korean or is this an English-speaking Python group in Seoul?
Well, I mean, we were just starting it. So there were three people, myself and then a Pakistani who was working. He's an Android developer and he was living there. And this Korean who was a music, like pianist, performance major in college. You know, I think she was in her last year, Sujin. So we just started studying and it was just the three of us. We did a lot of online courses. We spoke in English and all the courses were the, like, you know, on Coursera or edX or, you know, free platforms. And we kind of like met every Saturday, you know, for a few hours at a coffee shop or at the university and yeah, did our courses there.
Okay. So can I ask, how did you settle on Python then? Because Android is traditionally Java.
Oh, yeah.
And then a pianist has, I don't know how a pianist chooses a programming language a priori. And then you'd learned a bit of JavaScript. So how is it that you went,
Because there was a group meeting and we're going to do it in English. So I was like, yeah, let's try it. And then I liked them and it was very casual and it was a nice group of people. And yeah, we did that for like a year. And then I wasn't really like falling in love with it. I just kind of it was fun. It was like a hobby because I like to learn as a hobby. And then Jin from, he's Korean American. He came to Korea in Seoul and he taught us, we did one day a Flask and I was like, okay, that's fun. And then we did Django and I was like, wow, okay. And that kind of really clicked for me. And then from there, that was the thing that kind of got me really, to take programming seriously. So, yeah.
So it was a Django love affair.
Yes. Instantly. No, it was just really nice for me to kind of like, you know, write up, like, cause we did scraping and games and stuff, but that wasn't really my thing. And I just wasn't feeling it. But then, web development, it was cool to see like code I write instantly reflected in the product and to get that instant response. So I really like that. And then from there, Hassan, he was always kind of on my shoulder, kind of pushing me to do this, or he's like, hey, how about you do Django Girls? Hey, there's this Django Girls thing. Hey. And so I'm glad he did because, I applied and, you know, we did it. And we had 100.
You did the workshop as a, you did the workshop as a student or as a organizer or as a...
Right? I don't know. All three. No. So the kind of theory is, my theory back then and kind of still is, you learn by doing and master by teaching. So, I mean, I wasn't an expert. I had maybe a couple projects of Django done. But I was the organizer, and I didn't coach at that event, but I was mainly just the main organizer for it. So we had like 100 people participate totally.
Wow.
Total. And
fantastic.
It was really great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Super.
And then, I could keep going though, but, so that's kind of what got me started. And then I think Hassan, he sent me another link. Oh, there's this scholarship. What was it? Django Under the Hood. I had no idea. I was just like, oh, that's cool. But I didn't get it, obviously, because I wasn't like a Django expert, right? That was for... and then I went to DjangoCon Europe. I got a scholarship to go there. And that, for me, kind of circling back to your question of like, why Python and why Django? That's kind of what made it. I was teetering on the edge, like, should I go JavaScript more front end and do like full stack? Should I dive into Django? And I went to DjangoCon, I think it was Budapest that year. And I just loved the people right from the beginning, the community. It was really great for me. And so I was like, yep, these are my people. This is what I want to do. Yeah.
Okay. And so are you working now in the Python Django world?
Yes. I am working in Django, and I'm a freelancer. So I have my own LLC. And I have a few clients, but I kind of got into that through the Django community as well. After DjangoCon Europe, I was kind of encouraged and pushed to apply for a talk at DjangoCon US, and I got a talk accepted on Git and, you know, intro to version control. And then, you know, like I kind of started really taking it seriously, and I was like, wow, I could do this. So I applied a bunch of jobs. I got my first programming job here in Michigan, in Grand Rapids. I moved here for the job, and then on my first day, they gave me a code of ethics, and they asked me to to sign it, saying that I believe a marriage is only between a man and a woman, and I'm married to a woman, so I could not sign this. Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really difficult.
I saw that. Yeah. I remember that coming up.
It was hard for me because I finally made it, you know, after years of like trying to break through, and yeah. I had to walk away. So, but it was for the best. I reached out to the Django community, Django Girls, Ola, and then they kind of connected me with Jeff Triplett, and he kind of, you know, connected me with some job opportunities. And from then I had been, you know, I started working remote from then in my own, LLC, and I haven't looked back. I love it.
Fantastic.
Currently I'm working with a medical device company. And Django backend, and then also contact tracing because COVID. So that's interesting to do some like really meaningful work.
Yeah, that's quite high scale, I guess, at the moment.
Yes, it goes fast. It's growing, but it's important stuff, and so it feels good to like, you know, maybe help people.
Yeah, that was the real front end of the culture wars kind of moment. That you've moved city, you've gone for a job, and then, you know, to be put in a position where you can't take it is pretty strong. But that, okay. I don't know what I've got to say about it.
Ever since I decided to kind of jump into the Django community, I mean, I never looked back and I never regretted it because, you know, they were always there and they always turned up when I needed them. And so, like, I'm extremely grateful for the people and kind of that familiar, you know, sense of community.
Yeah. It's one of the best things about it, no.
Could you talk about, we could leap to the current Django Girls news, but were you, you know, after that initial Seoul meeting, were there other involvements that you had leading up to, you know, the recent news?
Oh, yeah. I've always been involved with Django Girls since I started programming basically in Korea. And when I came to Michigan, we started a local branch here as well, both Django Girls and PyLadies. And I was also the translation kind of co-management for the tutorial for Django Girls. So I was involved with that as well. And then part of the support kind of team. That's kind of up leading up to now. And now recently, I'm sure you know the news that Ola, Sendek, and Satarska had stepped down. So they asked us, a few of us, five of us, to step up to be the new trustees for the Django Girls Foundation.
Yeah, and that's really cool, no? Because Ola and Ola did so much to begin, but then obviously, you know, life takes over and you can't keep that going forever. So to be able to hand on the baton, that's kind of the moment where it becomes a sustainable thing in itself.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for them, because if they hadn't, you know, had been around and done what they did with Jangle Girls, I wouldn't be here either. So I'm really grateful that I have the opportunity to do the same thing maybe for, you know, future programmers, people that are just stepping in now, trying it out themselves.
Okay, so can you tell us about, like, so there's five of you, what's going on? You're the new steering council or something like that?
We're the trustees for the foundation. We help make decisions and steer where it's going to go. But we are currently trying to put together an advisory board to help us make those decisions, just to kind of have more diversity and include people from all over the world, because certain locations and have different difficulties when they're putting on a workshop that we might not consider or know about. So it's really important to have that a bigger group of people and more diverse. So right now that's kind of our focus. And also we've been focusing a lot on remote workshops and getting those up and getting our tutorials and organizing manuals up for people that want to run those and you know, best practices, because currently, you know, everything's kind of remote. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly that. Because it's one thing running a workshop in a shared space and a physical presence. And another one, how are you going to do that online in a Zoom call or whatever?
Right. And there's always, problems, maybe internet speed for one, or, some people don't have webcams. So there's even with those, there can be a lot of difficulties with creating that Jangle Girls kind of friendly, welcoming, you know, like energetic atmosphere in a remote setting can be difficult. Yeah. But it also opens the door to be more accessible to people that maybe couldn't have attended in-person events. So, either way you look at it, there's disadvantages and advantages there. So, we're doing what we can with our situation now, yeah?
Yeah, no, but that's a good point as well about the remote access, because like the Jangle Girls tutorial has become one of the sort of go-to tutorials for Jangle. You know, there's a tutorial on the Jangle docs, there's the DRF tutorials, there's the Jangle Girls tutorial. These are like the kind of, the cornerstone tutorials that are out there in the community. And then there's lots of other ones around.
Yeah. And so that's another thing we're trying to do, is just update those and make sure that, and this is like one of our big call to actions is, like, contributors, we need to always not even just update those docs and tutorials and everything, but also translate them. So I think it's now 18 different languages, the tutorial, and, you know, with every update, wow, that needs to be translated as well. So it's quite a big project to keep and maintain. So we are always looking for people that want to help out with both the tutorial and the translations.
Okay, and if listeners do want to get involved and lend an hour, lend a couple of hours from time to time, and when the mood takes them, how would they get involved in that translation or updating effort?
Yeah, everything, like our resources are all on janglegirls.org. And if they have questions directly, they can email at hello@janglegirls.org. And that'll put them in touch with the people that know and can give them direct resources. But yeah.
Okay, super. I mean, so one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is how we get more contributors to Django itself that aren't in the traditional demographic, shall we say. So we have a lot of contributors. They're still mostly white and they're still very male. Like, there, you know, there's some non-white contributors and there's the occasional non-male contributor. And one thing I always thought was, well, you know, maybe there's an on-ramp from Jangle Girls, but the Jangle Girls tutorial is very much a beginner's tutorial. And it's too much to expect someone who's just completed the Jangle Girls tutorial to then go on and be contributing to open source directly. But do you think there's something we can do there? I mean, what if I just said to you, well, come on, what's the problem? Why can't we get more non-male contributors? What would you say? What thoughts do you have, or do you have any?
Well, it's an excellent question. I have a lot of ideas and kind of very ambitious goals for Jangle Girls, which I don't know that all of them are feasible, but you have to start somewhere. So one thing for me that personally would be helpful is, let's say a participant comes to the Jangle Girls workshop, they do one tutorial. And then that's kind of like, oh, I can do the tutorial, I can code, cool. So now what? And then they kind of go back and they start actually learning it. And I would love to, first of all, get some intermediate material for Jangle Girls. So you have a blog post, what's next? And we have some resources after the tutorial for follow-up material, but I would love something more official. That would be really cool. But I mean, that's a big project in itself. And then the next thing would be is if we could partner somehow with, you know, some companies or organizations that maybe do mentorship or like a one-on-one screen share. I know that, you know, there's privacy and things, but that would be really cool to see like what programming looks like, especially as a beginner in the real world. And that's kind of like my idea. And it costs, you know, 1 hour of time for someone that's working. And to answer questions or just to see, or maybe like work through a project together. Like, so I had a scholarship through Toptal and they hooked me up. They set me up with a one-on-one every week for a year with a developer, senior developer. And we did projects together and he helped me work through it. And that was really valuable for me to see kind of how someone else worked, but also get that instant feedback because I was a remote worker. I didn't really have as much contact with other developers when I was just starting out. So something like that would help. In the Django space specifically, I mean, people that are already in the Django community, they could kind of, take someone that's more green and less experienced and kind of support them and help them kind of get started and be like their mentor or sponsor. And I think that would help just to kind of break through the barrier. When people first start, you know, contributing, it can be quite intimidating. And like, where do we start? What do we do? But I think once you get that first contribution or that first kind of, once you break through it, it'll be a lot easier and then they can go by themselves. So I think something like that would be helpful.
Okay, interesting. I think you're right. I mean, it's from the other side, it's like, oh, well, you know, this is just what you do. You find a ticket, open a PR. It looks so easy, but it's not, right?
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of little things that you don't know about coming into a new project, especially if you're a beginner. Maybe you haven't contributed to any like team project before. And it's just a little hints here or there that, you know, you need to know someone's there for you to ask when you have those questions. I think that's really can be helpful. I did that recently with a friend of mine with something she was working on. And she's like, wow, I couldn't have done this without you. And I said, yes, you could have. It just would have taken you a lot longer and probably would have been more frustrating. Yeah. Maybe, you know, like, yeah. But yeah, so I think that's kind of how I got, you know, that's where I am because people were there kind of pushing me along and, you know, always had an open ear for questions. And I think knowing that someone's there for that would be helpful. Yeah.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about your story learning programming versus mine. And one thing that jumps out is you were very good about seeking out a community and asking for help, which is its own skill. I mean, cause I just locked myself in a room for 2 years and I don't recommend that, but figuring out a way to, well, basically, essentially that's what I did.
That sounds very lonely. Yeah.
Well, I had, yeah, this isn't about me, but yeah, that's, I don't recommend that per se, but, having a mentor would have been invaluable. And if I, you know, things like Django Girls and now that I've, you know, kind of like you on the, you know, somewhat on the other side, there's the question of, well, how do you scale some sort of mentorship? Because what you were saying about saving time, I mean, I think of the educational stuff that I create as I'm saving people time. Yeah, they could figure it out. But if I can give it to someone in 30 minutes instead of 10 hours and they know that it's correct, you know, that has value. But in terms of the mentorship, you know, it does seem like it needs to have some sort of external structure, right? Like, because we could probably think of a couple dozen Django developers who, if we said, hey, here's this program, there's going to be some recognition, maybe there's even a little bit of money, and you do an hour a week with someone, they would do it. But to do it on your own and not have that machinery is really too much when someone's, you know, donating their time or doing it at a discount. So I hope that's, you know, something Django Girls can do. I mean, it'd be great if Django itself could do that, though. I'm sure the board can, you know, help with funding. But sorting out, you know, in the same way that, I mean, Carlton Mentors is one of the lead mentors for Google Summer of Code. If there was some sort of 10 people a year Django fellowship matched one-on-one, it was an hour a week, you know, but again, we need people to do it. But I think, you know, what happens is then people who otherwise wouldn't have stuck with programming do get into programming. And then like you, right, like you're now, you know, one of the leaders of Django Girls because you had that help. And so you want to pay it forward. So you're all that much more involved in the community because the community was able to help initially. So just brainstorming how to how to keep doing the kind of things that you all want to do.
And the other selling point is like I said, you learn by doing, but master by teaching. Like, you really have to know it, and you really kind of solidify all your knowledge through teaching other people. And not only that, but like one thing that was very valuable to me when I was working with other more senior developers was I would ask them something, like they would answer me like, I don't know, let's Google it. Like, and that I was like, oh, okay, you don't know everything. Okay, so it's okay if I don't know everything. And it was really important for me to see that. So like those kind of things that just come out when you're working with other people and seeing how they work, I think are important. But yeah, like you said, like, I mean, it's possible to do it. Just, I think logistically, it would take a lot of planning and kind of set up, but if we get it out there, I think it could be useful.
Yeah. And I wonder, one of the great things about the Django Girls tutorial is it's something that, you know, it's a CRUD app, but it's something that everyone does and can talk about. Like, there's a frame of reference. I mean, I often think, well, what if there were five, you know, start with Django projects, and they're all some variation of CRUD, of course. But if there's a common language that people can talk to, right? So that makes a lot easier, even for a mentor to say, oh, I kind of know what this is. Whereas when you're dropped in, I mean, if we asked five people to do a Django blog, they could all do it a little bit differently, which would be confusing for beginners, you know, it'd be interesting for more advanced people. But if there was, you know, yeah, a couple, like a stepping stone. I mean, in my books, I sort of do that actually. But of course, that's different than Django Girls. But I guess I'm just rambling today, so I apologize, but I'm just trying to think of, it's nice to have, I think of that.
But we like it when you ramble.
Well, then I have to listen to it when I edit this podcast. But I'm curious maybe for you, Rachel, with teaching others, one thing I think about is, so CRUD, how do you get CRUD through to people, right? Because you can say to someone, hey, you just finished the Django Girls tutorial. You know how to build almost every website out there, but people don't know that until they've said, oh, well, a blog is the same as a to-do list, is the same as, you know, a Facebook clone, is the same as, do you have any thoughts or experience with helping people make that leap?
I think that you, like, for me, when I was first starting, and I mean, no one has to tell you, excuse me, no one has to tell you that. I think you realize that, because what happens is, if you make the tutorial, or I mean, you make the blog with Django Girls tutorial, and then you want to make a to-do list, you're like, okay, well, what if I just rename this, you know, blog post task or something. And it kind of grows from there, and you start realizing that you can shape it and edit it and kind of use that as your base for reference. And so for me personally, so no one had to tell me that. I didn't have to, it just kind of naturally happened because that's all I knew. So that's what I was going off of. And I just tweaked it, and I made like five different versions of Django Girls blog with different, you know, as different websites and different purposes. Yeah.
Again, this is sort of like the kind of conversation like we would have on the Django Software Foundation, is, you know, universities, like just thinking of places that have people learning and some sort of money, because it is about unlocking just a little bit of money to tee it up for people in the community to teach. Because I didn't make that leap when I was starting out with CRUD. I mean, I heard people say it, but it just didn't register until I tried to build a couple other sites, and then I was like, oh, okay. It was like the fourth or fifth CRUD site where it sort of clicked. So I'm very aware, at least my own experience, that leap can take a while for folks to make.
Yeah, I personally, like, I don't know what other people feel, but for me, I kind of do things and then later I understand them because it's through the process of doing it. That's how I learn. But you put a book in front of me, it kind of, you know, I'd rather just dive in and break things and then figure out why it's broken and then fix it, obviously, with projects, not with work. But, you know, the other point was that you were talking about universities and stuff. I know that. So I'm a data science, I'm getting a degree in data science at University of Michigan, a master's degree. And one of my professors is Charles Severance. He does Python for everybody, I think. And that's like one of the first Python courses I did through Coursera. Yeah. And he also now has a Django specialization. I haven't done it, but I have a friend who has. And I mean, that's, again, like one more, you know, resource that someone could follow up with after the Django Girls tutorial. And I think that's you know, like there are more resources, but yeah, like having a community and having someone that you can get instant responses from would be, I guess, key. Like you said, have something set up. Mm-hmm.
Talking about following up, like, does Django Girls have any kind of idea of the numbers of numbers of people who do the workshop and then go on to work as a keep on programming? Because it's not just these days, you don't have to be a professional programmer to program. But do you do any kind of follow up, any surveys, anything like that to track
so
the results?
The total number of attendees I know is like 22,000 in 98 different countries. We did a follow up survey. Oh, wow. I guess a year or two ago. And at that time, I think it was of the respondents. We don't know. You know what I mean? Everybody didn't respond, but like 20% or something ended up with doing something in tech. Just here in Grand Rapids, though, I kind of keep in touch with some of the attendees because we become friends. But like they don't necessarily do Django, but one went into network security. And another one, you know, did a boot camp and does like, you know, front end or whatever. So it's really interesting to see them just kind of get that spark of like, yeah, I could do this. And then, you know, they go and do that other thing. So we don't have like solid numbers, and it's impossible really to, you know, to track, you know, all those people down. But yeah. I mean, a good percent. And I think, I mean, if you use it or not, if that's your calling or not.
But there's two sides to that. But there's going into tech, right? So the 20% to go into tech, that seems like quite a good high, like a high number, a good result. And then there'll be another equal amount probably who use it somehow. You know, they're at work doing some other job and they go, oh, I know a little bit of Python, and they're able to automate something or other that otherwise they wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe talk with developers that they work with, or, you know, understand, or maybe make their own blog or website, you know, for personal things, personal projects and stuff. Yeah, there's like, I mean, so there's not, you know, success isn't that someone becomes a developer. It's that, you know, they feel good walking away and they think that, hey, you know, I can do this and it's fun. That's kind of the goal of the workshop.
I was a coach in Barcelona and I had a group and working through, and there was a moment where they're going through the ORM and they're in the shell and all of a sudden they start flying Django, and it was just magic to watch the faces as mm-hmm. those like little eyes pop open. Ah, I'm like, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes, that was success. Because whether they use it or not beyond that, it's like, yes, you've seen it, you've got it,
it's learning,
you know.
Yeah,
I think 22,000 people through the workshop is phenomenal. Yeah. Success.
And
that's,
I mean,
amazing.
That's what I love about you know, Django Girls and helping people, is just bringing them through and seeing them reach their aha moment of like, just where it makes sense, where they get it, right? And like, there's also those, you know, there's a bug moments where they hate it and they can't, you know, but that's like, that's, you know, development. So, but it, I like it a lot. And that kind of has...
It normally involves static files.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I really like that. And the community, because, I mean, like... there is a real benefit to helping other people, like neurologically, like we feel good, you know? And it so yeah, I mean, that too. So help people.
So I wanted to ask about, you're studying data science now. What's that like, right? Because I think for maybe a lot of people in the web realm, that's sort of very interesting, but maybe not fully explored. Like, I'm curious, what have been kind of aha moments there? And, you know, that intersection is really probably the future of a lot of tech, right? Data science combined with web. So I'm just curious what that's been like studying data science coming from Django.
Yeah. So I kind of got interested in it because I work with a medical device company, and one of the things going forward is potentially like using big data to, you know, for patient information or whatever. And I was like, wow, yeah, that makes sense. And then I was, you know, just the more I kind of thought about it, the more kind of powerful it seems, and what you can do with data, and the people that control and manipulate data, like, who are they? And speaking of, like, you know, women in tech and minorities in tech, like, you know, who, yeah. So, and people tell stories with that data. So, like, it's important to me that everyone's stories are told and everyone's represented in those. And not just stories, but in healthcare, you know, you don't want to leave people out, and, you know, that could have really damaging consequences. So that's kind of my kind of inspiration to get into it. But yeah, going into it, it's weird. It's different than I thought. So I don't have a huge math background, which is challenging now because we're doing quite a bit, or research background. And so I'm learning a lot, and it's definitely, it's a challenge, but I'm enjoying it. But yeah, and it has a splash of Python. That's kind of my idea. But it's interesting to see. I'm not really sure. I haven't gotten to the point to actually merge the two yet, because I'm like halfway through the program, or maybe a third through, and we're kind of just doing the intro stuff, and you know, I'm getting my feet wet there. I'm really interested to see. I think that'll be really powerful to, you know, use what I learned from there and kind of merge it with, you know, the web and the tools that we develop.
Well, I think there's things like DRF add-ons, which, you know, will serializers for pandas data frames and things like that. So you've got your kind of data science tools, which you're using, and then it's really easy to put those into an API, which then you can then, I don't know, consume however, or put in a visualization on the web. Or, using the tools that you already know.
So, yeah, I mean, I've done visualizations and stuff, like you were saying, pandas and some other tools to do. So I've used those for charts and visualizations and whatnot for you know, reports on the web and stuff like that. But I'm interested to see like bigger scale how things can be used. Go ahead, William.
Oh yeah, I was just curious. How do you find formally learning programming, given that you have a career entirely self-taught? You know, what are your thoughts on the classroom experience?
It's an online program. And it's a little bit different. So instead of like semester is like 3 months or whatever, it's one class for 1 month, and you just kind of keep going that way. So it's really fast paced. I never get bored. I'm always learning something new. But I find that because I learned programming on my own and through online courses, it's very natural for me to kind of learn this way. Because a lot, it's similar to that kind of feeling. And a lot of it, I kind of have to figure out myself. You know, they have like the lectures and stuff, but mostly like, they're like, here's a problem, figure it out. And, you know, with the tools that they give us or the information, right? So it kind of feels like I'm just continuing what I've been doing, like just kind of poking around and figuring it out. And I think because I come from a non-traditional background, it actually helps me in this sense. Because I'm used to that and I'm comfortable doing that.
Yeah. It's nice that there's, you know, degrees in data science. Like, I'm not aware of like a master's in Django or a master's in web development for some reason. Maybe it's because there's less math directly involved, but, if someone wanted to like formally learn Django, you know, through college credits, I don't think you can. Maybe there's a way.
Yeah. I mean, there should be. Let's do it. Like, why don't we? But,
well, I mean, part of it is
that would definitely like,
I mean, part of the challenge is that there's no, you know, tenured faculty to teach it. I mean, I've taught college courses and, you know, unfortunately the reality is for $3,000 for a semester's worth of work, it doesn't make any sense for a practitioner to do at the moment.
Right.
But if anyone's listening and want, you know, is at a university, there are people who would teach it. They just have to figure out the incentives around how to do it. I mean, I know that my books are used at a number of universities as part of a larger web development course they have. So a bunch of places will have a semester-long course where it's like a crash course in HTML, CSS. I think they've already learned Python, and they basically sort of work through the beginner's book, but not even all of it. But that's about as much as I'm aware of in any sort of undergraduate setting in the U.S. anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely, like, bring more community in, more people in, and it would help, like, funding. It would just, like, kind of grow it all, because if you have that many people learning it, then there are like many people that can, you know, work in the field and et cetera. That would be cool to see. But, I mean, goals, right?
Yeah, like, well, and I think having mentorship and accreditation helps, right? I mean, if you have a master's in data science, that means something. There's no real equivalent of a credential in Django. I mean, I know you can get one on LinkedIn or something, but I agree. It would be helpful to have something or other where you say, I took this course, and as part of the course, I had to do these projects, and I have a portfolio to show. And, you know, the teacher, whoever they are, says, you know, if you pass the course, there's some certifying, you've reached a certain level. Certainly that would be helpful, you know, to the community. Though I guess the challenge is, you know, Django is more tenuous than Python, you know, programming or data science, right? Data science can still be a course even if the tools change, whereas Django is maybe one degree too specific for a formal education.
And I mean, I kind of like,
so I guess it could just be web development.
I agree. I benefit for not having like a degree, because I mean, I don't have a degree in you know, computer science. So, there not being one kind of benefits me, like, yeah, like, cause I'm kind of in the same boat as a lot of people. I feel like, and yeah, the Django community is really welcoming for that.
Well, you're speaking to two people without formal degrees in computer science either. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So Rachel, you kind of skipped over it quite quickly, but I want to come back quickly just while we're talking about your machine learning or your data science course about representation in data sets and things. Because it seems that every week we see an example where a machine learning model was trained on, you know, white men, and then they put it in the real world where it's not just white men and it fails horrendously. Is that something that they cover in your course about, you know, representative data sets and being aware of cognitive biases and biases in your data sets? And, you know, do they train you to avoid that?
I mean, yes, but there can always be more, right? We had an ethics course. We discussed that extensively. And I know there are, we talk about, you know, where you get your data and how you do your studies, how you do your training. So, I mean, we do go over it and it's there, but I don't know that maybe I'm just more aware of it and I'm more, other people that maybe don't have to consider that or think about it, they might not think it's as prevalent, right? Because I'm kind of like, I see it there because that's on my mind, right? But yeah, there can always be more. I think a lot of people are just like data, like, let's throw it in, let's, you know, run the models. Yeah, I think there has to be a little bit more kind of thought put into like
this idea that you don't notice privilege unless you when you are privileged. It's like, no, it's fine. This data set is representative. But
yeah, exactly.
Well, I think we're about at 40 minutes. What are the next steps for people, right? So you have a personal site if people want to reach out to you. What can listeners do to support Django Girls, right? Since that's maybe the main topic of the show. And
yes. So right now, we have two, people that are like paid employees with Django Girls part-time. They're super helpful, Anna and Claire, and they, you know, help with fundraising and, docs and just kind of organization in general. So right now we're at about 45% of our monthly, needs for finances. So like, reoccurring donations on Patreon would be good. Or I know we're setting up GitHub sponsors. That's the thing to do. And if you Amazon and you use Amazon in the UK, you can add Django Girls as your Smile, Amazon Smile organization. Or just send money on PayPal at hello@djangogirls.org. So, I mean, besides money, we're always looking for help maintaining like the site, the tutorial, you know, people that want to organize workshops, people that want to, you know, help out and steer the direction of Django Girls on the advisory board. Those are all things that we are welcoming help with.
So there's massive opportunities to get involved, is there?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, yes, super.
We're happy to get any help.
Super. Just on the maintaining the tutorial thing, that's a nice... it's a nice way to get into open source if you want to, because you don't have to give a lot of time. You can fix the little things. You can update one section. You can, if you happen to, if English isn't your native language, you can help on that translation, and then it'll deepen your knowledge, but deepen your knowledge of contributing and joining a community. And, you know, you don't have to give hours and hours to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It could be a one-time thing. If, you know, you don't have to commit to, you know, maintaining a huge project. Just if there's, you know, maybe a Django update, you can update the tutorial to match. Keep it up to date with that.
Super. And is there, just to finish off, is there anything else you'd like to call out? Any other bits and bobs that you'd like to tell the audience about while you're here?
No, I don't think so. I feel like we've covered, you know, the important parts.
Okay, super. Well, let me say thank you for coming on. Awesome chat. Let's wrap it up there. And listeners, we're Django Chat as ever. Chat Django on Twitter, and join us next time. Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
Great. Thank you.